Welcome back to the Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my guest tonight at the big table is the CEO of the Auditorium Theater. Tanya Castroverde Moskalenko took over the role back in October of 2016. She's had a career in arts administration. She was running performance centers in Memphis and Germantown, Tennessee, and then in Carmel, Indiana. She has over 20 years of experience bringing arts and culture to communities, and she aims to do the same with the Auditorium, whose building is in its 129th year, built by Adler and Sullivan back in 1889, of course. Sits right at Congress and Wabash in downtown Chicago. What a beautiful building. The sprawling theater has been home to so many artistic performances, from Broadway musicals to dance recitals. The resident company today is the Joffrey, and the Alvin Ailey Dance Company will be visiting this week, March 7th through the 11th. Castroverde Moskalenko has talked about transforming this wonderful place into the theater of the people, wanting to cement the auditorium firmly in the hearts and minds of Chicagoans, and all Chicagoans. Castroverde Moskalenko's own background found her struggling to find opportunities to pursue arts and culture at a young age. She and her parents came to this country as political refugees from Cuba. So tonight, let's talk about the history of the auditorium. We have to do that. But also, let's talk about making a theater for the people. And how do you make sure that arts and culture finds their way to the next generation of Chicagoans? Tanya Castroverde Moskalenko was named one of Chicagoans of the Year by the Chicago Tribune, and the theater was just awarded a huge grant from the MacArthur Foundation. Tanya Castroverde Moskalenko, thanks for joining me tonight at the big table. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here with you today.
Sorry I struggled with that name so much, but I was
Oh, you did great.
No, okay. Let's talk about this. You've had a career in arts administration. Why'd you come to Chicago? What was it about the Auditorium Theater that attracted you to the job?
Well, two things. Certainly the Auditorium Theater's legacy. Having been a dancer before I was an arts administrator, when I learned that Anna Pavlova and Isadora Duncan, both great legendary names in dance, had performed on that stage, it just really was very inspirational to know that here was a theater that had an amazing legacy and that it was still in operation. So that piqued my interest when I was first called for the opportunity. And then as I learned more about the theater, I was just really shocked and surprised at the legacy of the theater.
Yeah.
I know you talked about transforming the theater to the theater for the people, but the reality is that that was always the intent of the theater and of its founders. So on the heels of the Haymarket riot, Ferdinand Peck, who was a businessman, a philanthropist, and an arts lover in the community, decided that this city would be a better city if all the people of Chicago could come under one roof and enjoy the arts. And so that's when he tapped Adler and Sullivan to build this theater.
That's amazing. And I wanted to assume that there wasn't this kind of history at the other places you've worked that I mentioned in the lead, but to come to be an arts administrator and an artist yourself, to be a dancer, to come into a place that has this kind of history. Are you in awe of it? Do you say, okay, I'm going to put my imprint on it, or this is what we need to change? How difficult is it coming into an organization that has such immense history?
I am in awe of it, but I also consider myself coming into this place. I know this place was here for 127 years before I arrived, and I know we'll be here long after I'm gone. So I see myself as a gatekeeper, as someone to keep the flame alive and to keep the inspiration alive for the next generation.
There's been so much dance history in this space, and there continues to be with Joffrey and the Alvin Ailey coming back through. Is this a dance theater? I saw Les Mis when I was a kid at a high school and a high school field trip to see the Broadway musicals. What does the Auditorium Theater do in 2018?
So it's not just a dance theater. I do think that we are known in this community as a dance presenter, and that's a beautiful space for dance. I mean, the sight lines are unequal to any theater around. So it is a great space for dance. But that's not all that we do. We do we do music in all its forms, and we do, you know, everything from graduations. We do opera recitals. We do popular music. We do a lot of entertainment. So the space is really quite flexible. When it was originally created, it was created with the intent of it being for symphony orchestras. The Chicago Symphony started there before they built Symphony Hall and moved away in 1904. And it was also built for the opera, but not the opera as we know it here in Chicago today. It was built for the Metropolitan Opera of New York to come here, and they used to come
tour, yeah,
to Chicago about twice a year.
Really?
And then in 1929 was when the Lyric Opera on Wacker opened up, and what was then the Chicago City Opera moved to Wacker.
I don't know enough about the history of the building and the theater company and everything that goes along with the auditorium, but reading, I was surprised to see that it did have a downturn, which would have been the later part of the 20th century, where the 50s and 60s and 70s, where it seemed to be downtrodden. Was that because so many of the companies that used to perform in there or other places started getting their own buildings and going, you just mentioned 1929 with the Lyric or Symphony Hall?
Absolutely.
Moving away.
I think when the Chicago Symphony moved in 1904, but it was really in 1929 when the opera moved, because the next year we had the Great Depression, the market crash. So in 1930, that really affected the theater. So by 1941, we had filed for bankruptcy. Hmm. And then the theater, and Roosevelt University purchased the building in 1946, but we remained closed until 1967.
Wow.
And so we reopened our doors in 1967, so just about 50 years ago. And since we reopened our doors, we have done everything from Broadway shows. You mentioned Les Mis. We did Phantom. We did Showboat. We did, I think it was the only place where we could do Miss Saigon. And that was before the days of Broadway in Chicago came into town and purchased several buildings. So we did Broadway. Then in the 80s, we went through this period. It was all rock and roll. And we had everybody from, I mean, you can name them. And they were at the Auditorium Theater. So we actually were doing so much, and we're active and open so many nights a year because of all this activity that was going on.
As an arts administrator comes in to be the new CEO, and the auditorium is known for having a lot of itinerant shows where they'll have a weekend or two weekends, and then there'll be something else. And so, do you have to rein it in? Do you have to say, that was really great that we had all these rock shows and we had all this theater and now and all these dance, but this is what we do and we're going to do it great?
So I think that a performing arts center is in its place, in its community, to serve the community. We are not a producing entity, so the Chicago Symphony produces classical music concerts. The Lyric Opera produces opera.
Right.
And Joffrey Ballet produces ballet performances. And a performing arts center is really a reflection of the community that it serves. And so we both present. So we present different things. Dance. I have a big passion for dance, and a lot of our patrons love dance. So we present dance. We present music. We're looking at doing more of that. This past year, we did speakers. So we had Ruth Bader Ginsburg in. We had Hillary Clinton come in. Ken Burns, that was a partnership with WTTW. So we are serving the community with what the community wants. In addition to what we present, then we also work in partnership with promoters all over the city. And those promoters use our facilities as well.
Right.
And then we have other nonprofit partners who use our facilities as well. So it's a mix. And when you look also from a just purely business and financial perspective, it is that mix of earned revenue and unearned revenue or contributed revenue that makes up
I have a lot of questions about that. We'll get everybody warmed up. We'll get the listeners warmed up to the story before we get into the nuts and bolts of how you run an arts business in 2018. My guest, the CEO of the Auditorium Theater, Tanya Castroverde Moskalenko. She took over back in October 2016. Here in 2017, she was named one of the Chicagoans of the Year by the Chicago Tribune, and they just got a huge grant from the MacArthur Foundation. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back more with Ms. Castroverde Moskalenko here on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio, the CEO of the Auditorium Theater, Tanya Castroverde Moskalenko, was just named one of the Chicagoans of the Year for dance in 2017 here by the Chicago Tribune. It's amazing to think about the tremendous performances that the Auditorium Theater has seen over its 129 years. And some of those, including the reimagined Nutcracker by the Joffrey Ballet, just happened in the last year. For you coming in from mid-level places, to come from Indiana, from Tennessee, to come into Chicago, do you come in when you take over and say, all right, this is what I want to do with this space. This is the new series. Everybody step to the side. Tanya's here now. This is how we're going to do it. How do you program
a season? That's not how I work.
Okay, good. I assume that.
No, that's not how I work, because I think that, again, I think that the community is very important. The community guides what we do. So I don't come in, you know, and start firing people left and right and say, okay, you know, this is a new world here today. I do a lot of listening as to what what it is, listening and really research about the community that I am now serving. And I do. For me, it's a service. And so I got into the nonprofit world because that's where my passion lies. If not, I would have gone out into the business world and done something different. But I am passionate about serving communities through the performing arts.
Where do you think that comes from?
I think it probably has to do a little bit with my background as coming to America as a political refugee. I mean, I was very young, but I had a different experience. And I do think that has one of the experiences that's been, for me, just really impactful is having left Cuba. And when we left because of the government that took over the communist regime and they took everything that we owned away from us, I grew up with this sense of that nothing is really permanent. And so your integrity, your character, your service, those are the things that matter really at the end of the day. And so it was important for me. It's always been what I have wanted to do was to be in a role where I could make a difference. Yeah. And of course, having been passionate about dance growing up, my mother's a pianist, and so I fell in love with the arts very early on and fell in love with dance instead of piano, which almost got me disinherited. but I always felt that it was, you know, we all make our impact through different forms, different fields. Well, and for me, it was through the arts.
Reading your story about how you came up through the arts and the great story about the piano being delivered when you came to the States, or 2 years after you came to the States, and how that music that your mother was playing on the piano really taught you a lesson about arts and culture. But as any family coming to a new land and money was not necessarily available at every turn to a lot of the things that you wanted to do, that were extracurricular, your family didn't have the finances to do so. That sounds like a similar story to a lot of kids who may not have, in this community, resources or ability to get places. How has that affected how you do your work as a leader in the arts and culture community? The fact that there were times in your life where arts and culture weren't readily available.
Right. And I think that it has affected the way that I look at the business models, and it has had a great impact. And so when I talked a little bit about contributor revenue, and that becomes a very important part of our financial model, because that allows us to pay for providing access to those people in those communities that don't have access. And so it's been important for me to create programs where the barriers are removed so that everyone can have access to the arts. And I have implemented programs that do that in every place that I have.
How do you do that? Because there's here we go into that messy conversation, right? But how do you, in a day and age where there will be a lot of stories about how kids who grow up in the city of Chicago, they don't leave their areas, the big questions for arts organizations are, do you take the arts to the neighborhood? Do you keep it at the auditorium and try to get people there through the schools? It's not as easy just to say that you want to offer up programs and opportunities for people.
It's not easy.
It's a complicated mix.
It's complicated and it's expensive. So we have a program right now that we instituted right around the time I arrived. It was we were implementing it. And this program, it's the Admit One program, and it does bring community groups. It's not just children, but different community groups into the auditorium, and they don't have to pay to come. But then you run into the problem, and this has been everywhere I've been. All right, so you give them, you provide free tickets, you provide free entrances. How do they get to the theater?
Yeah, right.
And so this program, one of the things I'm excited about is that we actually provide transportation if that's a barrier. We provide a dinner for the groups if that's a problem, if they're having to travel for such a long period of time. They arrive downtown Chicago and they haven't had their dinner, and, you know, performance is 2 hours, then they have to drive back. So we will provide dinner if we need to. We will provide transportation if we need to, and then we provide, obviously, the tickets. We also provide a session so that the groups understand what they're going to see and that there's a little context into what they're going to see. But with something like Alvin Ailey that's coming to Chicago, and this is the 49th year, next year we'll be celebrating their 50th year coming to Chicago, it is really important for a lot of our youth to see this company and to see the power of the arts and how it does remain relevant and reflects their lives. And these are the kind of companies they need to be seeing.
Right.
So with, you know, you mentioned, do you take it to the communities? Do you bring the communities in? I think it's both. We can do both, and we do both. And, but I think it's important because I was recently started following somebody on Twitter. It's called My Block, My City.
Yeah.
And he posted recently about, took a picture of all these kids he was with, that some of these kids have never even seen the lake, which is just astounding. And so I do think, and I know it's been in my experience, to see the face of a child that has never been inside a theater.
Does it help you that you're not from Chicago? Meaning there's a lot of people that have heard these stories, and you can go, I know being from this area, that story has been told a lot about kids from Chicago area who've not gone to the lake, who've never been downtown, things that just you scratch your head. But having an outside perspective to come in and see that there are challenges, especially when it comes to segregation and inequality, does it help you that you're not from here?
I think sometimes it does, because you see things with a different set of eyes. And I do think that sometimes when we have problems that are so in your face every day, all day long, you start to look the other way. And so I do think that helps in many ways. But again, I'm really committed and passionate about equity and inclusion in the performing arts. And we're trying to find those ways. We're trying to continually reimagine how are those ways that we can bring the kids in so that we can create the next generation of arts lovers. So one of the programs that I instituted in one of the previous places I was in was that we would have performances, and it's not inexpensive to attend a performance, and sometimes, you know, the best seats are expensive, and when you provide those discounted tickets, usually they're in the nosebleed section, right? And I really wanted to encourage parents to start bringing their kids. But if a ticket's $100, well, a family of four is $400 to attend a performance. So I instituted a program where the parents could buy the tickets, but they could bring their child and sit them right next to them for $15. And what started happening was that it was cheaper to bring your child to the theater with you than to leave them home with a babysitter.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
And we started building the next generation. We started seeing kids in classical music performances, and we started seeing kids in dance performances and world music performances. And so that really, I think a lot of times those things can't be measured for years down the road. But if you're used to going to the theater, just like if you're used to going to a Cubs game, you're going to become a fan.
We'll take a quick break here for the news. I just want to make it clear, I was in the nosebleeds for Les Mis, so you're doing great work at the auditorium. Tanya Castroverde-Moskalenko is the CEO of the Auditorium Theater. We're talking, Alvin Ailey is going to be there coming up the 7th through the 11th. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll get some news tonight, and we'll come back, and we'll continue our conversation at the big table, so stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio tonight, the CEO of the Auditorium Theater, Tanya Castroverde-Moskalenko, came here in 2016. She was named one of the Chicagoans of the Year by the Chicago Tribune in 2017, and she is at the helm of a theater, the building, which has been around for 129 years, 130th anniversary coming up in 2019. It's amazing to think about that building and what it means to Chicago. I was reading a piece about you that was in the Sun-Times, and you talked about trying to firmly cement, you know, the auditorium in the hearts and minds of Chicagoans. I love the Auditorium Theater, and I think about it. I'm from here, and I guess it is cemented, maybe loosely, but how hard is it to do that? I mean, how hard is it to step in and say we're going to not only be one of the theaters that are in Chicago, but we're going to be one that's cemented in their hearts and minds?
Well, I think certainly the legacy of the theater is so important, particularly to a city like Chicago that is so diverse. And I guess the biggest thing that I look at as my challenge as I look at the next few years is the theater is 128 years old, 129 years old. The theater needs work. And so how, if you know, you have great memories of the theater. So many people that I talk to have great memories of the theater. I mean, it's remarkable how many people have actually been through the theater. If we were to enter into a campaign to raise the funds necessary to restore, renovate this theater, how far will your heart take you?
Will
it take you as hard to go into your back pocket and pull out the checkbook, you know? And so that's really, I want to see, I want to know, is it that impactful? Is it that compelling? Is the history and the legacy and whatever experience different Chicagoans had with the theater, is it that compelling that you're willing to step up and help a campaign to restore the theater?
You know, it makes me think about what we see around just in the last month when we have the federal budget comes out and the priorities are laid out. Usually in the last at least two budget cycles, we have seen a disproportionate or a disinterest in funding the arts. The NEA, both times they were talking about gutting it completely and really taking away some federal dollars that are appropriated for arts and culture for theaters and around the country, including the Auditorium Theater in some extent. You have worked in performance centers in the Midwest, ones that had much more, they're much more reliant on the government to give money, and now you're at the Auditorium Theater. How do you see this playing out? I don't mean politically, but you've been in this for 20 years. Every year it seems more and more that reading the tea leaves that that government's going to get out of subsidizing arts and culture. As an administrator, how do you see the future kind of playing out?
I think it will continue to play out like that. Every couple of years, the government will threaten to take the money away. And I mean, I've been seeing this for over 20 years happen. It's the same story. But I really think that for performing arts centers, it's funny because I don't understand why it's okay to give companies, for-profit companies who will come into communities, why give them so many tax incentives or tax breaks, but then to provide, you know, a small portion of the budget toward arts organizations, that's a problem. And then it's like, well, it should only be supported by the private sector. Well, sometimes you provide, I mean, look at the companies we're trying to attract here to Chicago, and we're providing, I want to say billions, probably millions of dollars in incentives. But so where is the money
for
the performing arts?
It's just optics. Maybe if we start giving tax deals. Yeah.
It's semantics.
If you start getting tax deals to the auditorium, it'd be different than putting it into a budget the way that we've done it in the past. But not unlike what you said about having to rethink the way that you approach getting community involved in arts and culture organizations. Like you just mentioned, the $15 idea that you worked out at a different place where you could bring your kid for $15. Mm-hmm. That's thinking outside the box. Mm-hmm. How do you think outside the box when it seems every year the ability to raise revenue or to at least subsidize that revenue continues to shrink?
You know, I really do think it's a domino effect. So we have so many people, so many elected officials that don't value the arts. You know, when I go to Europe and I see the investment that in Europe the different governments make into the arts and provide financial support for the arts organizations, and then you see these vibrant communities because it spills over. If you have a vibrant performing arts center or a vibrant theater, your restaurants are going to start popping up right next to it. Other businesses are going to start popping up around it. And then you also have a more educated workforce. You have a more educated citizenry.
Yeah, right.
So I think it's such a domino effect, right? And it feeds onto itself. So an investment in the performing arts is an investment in the future of this country. And why do we not have that investment? Well, many of those people who are making those decisions probably were not taken to the theater when they were young, right?
It might possibly be the case.
Maybe they did not have those opportunities, or maybe they just chose not to have them. And I read something this morning that was so beautifully written. I'll share it with you. Someone who said that children need music and dance and poetry and literature just the way they need to eat and play, you know, just have those essentials. Well, the arts are also part of their essentials.
I mean, you've been an artist, a dancer, an art administrator. You've been involved with arts and culture for 20 years. Why do you think that is? Why do you think that kids need that? Why do you think they need poetry as much as they need food?
So you can walk your whole life and not think that you need it until the day you're smacked against it. And then you wonder how you ever lived without it. When I listen to, you know, a Beethoven symphony or, you know, the fifth piano concerto, which I love, and I think, how can anybody live without this? Because it really does connect you to the world.
Where do you think the disconnect came from? Because I always think about dance as when I see dance performances. And we've had many dance companies on the show. And I saw Joffrey at the auditorium. I am just blown away at what can be done with the human body. It's just excellence in a way that I could never be able to do that. There's no way to do that. And to see someone who has almost manipulated themselves to be able to be art in motion, it's incredible. It has a profound effect on you. And not everybody has access to go see dance. And not everyone, when they go see dance, has that response.
Has the same response.
They may say, oh, it's highfalutin. Or they, you know, we kind of joke all the time. We wanted to call, for a while we were calling, what was the name of the segment? We were actually calling segments about performing arts. And we were kind of making a joke off this idea of this highfalutin kind of concept. Where do you think that comes from? Have arts organizations done a poor job of communicating with people who would love an artistic experience but feel like they're left out?
Yeah, you know, I think that there is some of that. I mean, I think we need to take the blame for some of that. But I also think that art is inherent in our humanity. Movement is part of who we are as human beings. And music, I mean, our heartbeat is, it's there, right? It's like the movement, the music, that it's there as a human being. But when we take the art and we disconnect it from our humanity and we put it on stage and we isolate it from the people. And so then it's like we're demigods on the stage and the people are just spectators.
Right.
And that connection is lost. And so I think that bringing it back to the people, to allow that connection between the people and the artists and the art forms. And so we do need to create opportunities for people to participate, to not just be sitting on the other side of that fourth wall.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's one reason why the choir community has been on an upswing for the past number of years, because choir singing in a choir is very accessible to people to do, whether it's through their areas of worship or at schools.
Right.
It's something that they can do. But when we disconnect it and we make it so far-fetched that, you know, you can't even touch it, I think that there's a disconnect there.
And there's something to be said that that experience, especially when it comes to young children, is still there, whether it be through their community centers or their schools. Choir sticks around. Some of the other things, like maybe taking a band or dance or other mm-hmm. things, it may become more extracurricular. And you see how kids gravitate to choir and are able to have more of a relationship with it.
Right. And we are creative beings. That's who we are in our essence. And so we have the ability to connect with the arts.
As an administrator and someone who's dedicated their life, there's so many new forms of technology. There are so many ways to put artistic vision on different platforms. When you think about the Auditorium Theater, and obviously been around since 1889, will there be a time when the theater is less important than it is today? You see it like as an arts administrator, it always comes back to the live performance.
Absolutely.
In front of you.
Absolutely. Because you are in a room when you're sharing an experience. It's a communal experience. And that, you know, you can't do with just some headsets in your own room. And I think people are always going to crave that communal experience.
The CEO of the Auditorium Theater, Tania Castroverde-Moskalenko, is my guest tonight. Of course, the Auditorium Theater is just next year will be 130 years, which is amazing. The building is a tremendous asset to Chicago, right there in the South Loop, right next to Roosevelt University, right there on Congress, built by Adler and Sullivan back in 1889. It's amazing. This weekend, through the 7th through the 11th, will be the Alvin Ailey Dance Company coming through for their 49th season, their 50th next year as well. It's a big year next year for you.
It will be.
Tania Castroverde-Moskalenko, I can't thank you enough for being my guest tonight.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it so much.